Fáilte, my name is Andrew Healy, and I'm a lover and drinker of Irish whiskey. I'm on a journey of discovery to learn as much as I can about the great spirit of the Emerald Isle. Along that journey, I'm lucky enough to meet other people who are passionate about Irish whiskey, and the My Favourite Irish podcast is their story and their favourite Irish whiskey. Whether that's their current favourite, their first ever dram, or one that has a special place in their life. On today's episode, I got to spend some time recently, actually it was back in January, with Rory Lynch, who lives here in the Napa Valley, and whose folks hail from Carrisavine in County Kerry, and Macroom in County Cork. Rory was raised here in the Bay Area, and is fierce proud of his Irish ancestry. We had a grand old chat about Rory, his folks' journey to this part of the world, his trips back to Ireland, and his 40-something cousins, the Napa Valley, and where he lives, up in Anglin. And yes, we talked about Irish whiskey, as we sipped on his favourite Irish whiskey, which is the Jemison Caskmates Stout Edition, which we discovered is a great Irish whiskey to use in an Irish coffee. Listen along. Fáilte Arash, Rory, well, I'm at your bar. Thank you.
And your favourite
Irish.
Welcome.
So who's responsible for this bottle?
So this was a gift. You were mentioning the production year, possibly 2007. Yeah. When Thomas gave this to me, he's a lad from... I think he grew up in Dublin, but he lives outside of London now. But he gave it to me as a gift at Burning Man.
Fantastic.
And, you know, as you do when you're at this event, you share... You know, plenty of, probably half of what is gone.
And we'll probably make a little bit of a dint in it today as well.
So. Yeah, why not?
So,
Well, and what is the glass we have here?
It's a whiskey tasting glass.
It is.
So like we are...
Proper snifters?
It is. It's the real thing. Well,
okay.
We are, this is the first My Favourite Irish to come from the inside of an Airstream.
Here we are in the 73...
So where is the bar today, the Airstream?
Yeah, so it's a 1973 Argosy, which is a generic brand, kickoff. It's a cheaper version of the Airstream.
Okay.
And there was a fellow at the VA in Yonville who managed the carpentry office. And he gutted this thing. There was probably carpet on the floor, cabinets, you know, where you are. And he replumbed it. Redid the propane gas lines, okay. And here we are, functioning trailer. I can pull up with my truck.
And this is, you told me, this is your guest room. What a you know, it's a small, compact place, but it's everything your guest needs.
Absolutely. It's got two beds, so if my friends who are parents want to bring their kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's got a toilet. It's like
self-contained.
Hot water, you're all good.
Perfect.
And... Yeah.
Let's start with a sláinte.
Sláinte.
Lovely. So this is going to be lovely. We're going to taste it a little bit now. There's a lot of chat to come.
Yeah.
And then we'll take a break and we'll make an Irish coffee with it, because folks don't know when we're recording, but it's New Year 2023. We have been deluged with rain here in Napa, which is fantastic. And you and I are nice and cozy in here, and we're going to get cozier.
And I would say snow. Up in the mountains.
Yes.
Where I just came from. Like,
so,
wow.
So, yeah. So, oh, that's lovely. And I actually think, you and I have talked about...
And what's your take on tasting it?
I like it.
What do you find?
There's a lovely sweetness on the finish that I think comes from those stout barrels, a kind of a soft, creamy sweetness. It's Jemison in a different package.
So... This didn't occur to me, stout edition.
Yeah.
So
the story goes that, and obviously we can be corrected in the comments if we're wrong, but the distillery down in Middleton has a collaboration with a local brewery in the area, and they use the old stout barrels from that to finish.
Middleton in County Cork.
County Cork, yeah.
Okay.
So, and of course, a name like Rory Lynch, you've got some lineage, some ancestry that goes to Cork.
Well, I mean, lo and behold, I've got my Irish passport.
The real deal.
And so when I got this, when I left college, say 20 years ago, and because I'm a son of an Irish mother and an Irish dad, but the lineage goes back, if I had a grandparent, mm-hmm. I would I would be a citizen or be entitled to receive my Irish passport. And so I went around, I got my passport, I flew to Zurich at the time.
Okay.
And I was going to visit my good friend in Provence. He had a family home in a town called Arles, which is known for Van Gogh.
I know Arles, yeah.
And so he spent years there growing up as a kid and just, he's like, why don't you come? I'm studying in Aix-en-Provence. And I said, well, I studied in New Zealand my junior year of college. And I said, you're going to have a great time. Like, why not? And I just, and he had a small apartment. I ended up on a 6-month return. I was supposed to fly home. And I got introduced to this organization that I could just keep traveling and stay with hosts around the world. And I met the organization in Dublin.
All because of your Irish passport?
Well, I mean, and being in Europe at the time, I didn't have to go home.
Okay.
It's like I was home.
Okay, yeah.
And visas were cheaper on the Irish passport. Like, when I went to Turkey, they wanted like $75 for a U.S. citizen. Or they wanted like $20 for an Irish guy.
There you go. Perfect. It has its advantages.
Well, and I remember going to Morocco and showing the guy at the hotel or hostel. He's like, no one knows much about Irish. The thing they commonly say is, oh, the Irish, they really like to drink. And I said, well, it beats being American after 9/11.
Yeah, no doubt.
And, I mean, it's just...
So back to the ancestry.
Oh, please.
Yeah, so mom and dad came to America. So where's home for them originally?
So my father's from the Ring of Kerry.
Okay.
If you know Carrigrohane.
Yeah, beautiful part of the world.
So, you know, maybe the big town or the gateway is Killarney.
Yeah.
And then now it's become like a token tour. Like people go on a bus and they're like, we want to see the Ring of Kerry. And you go to this small town and maybe it's about 5 miles that in Dunedin where this, the address is, or I don't know, it's just like township or village area.
Townland would be, yeah.
It's like how did 13 kids and the parents live in this like
small
stone hut, like that no longer had a roof. And my dad was the oldest of 13 and he left when he was 21 before his sister and a brother were born.
Really? Actually left before his siblings
were born? Well, his mother was like, here's your ticket. And I showed you the Queen East ship that he took.
Yeah, and he ended up in Boston.
He ended up in the East Coast working in a coal mine. And he made his way to San Francisco in the 30s.
Okay.
I mean, you got to think, my father was, when I was born, he was 74.
Wow.
If you can put that together. And my mom was 32 years age younger.
Really? And mom came from?
Mom was from Macroom.
Okay, County Cork.
Yeah. And Macroom then, you know, they lived, I don't know, they lived in like a, what I would call a lord house, or it was kind of a palatial home.
Okay.
When you see it today. And on some land, and they were farmers, and my mom always had the sense of entrepreneurship. And her mom would be like, just shut your mouth, Anne, and wait for me for the next 3 hours while I go in and have a cup of tea with my mate. And so she left one night from the seminary where she was doing a nursing program.
Okay.
And my auntie tells a story. She's like, yeah, your mom just like grabbed the suitcase and said in a note to her mom, by the time you get this, I'll be in London. Thanks for
reading.
I don't know what she said, but.
And then.
She left.
Up and went to London, but ended up out here in California.
She did she continued her nursing cert in London.
Mm-hmm.
And I think her oldest sister was also there at the time.
Okay.
Which she had some ties or reason to be there, maybe other Irish nurses.
Okay.
And then she got in 62, she got a placement in Fresno.
Fresno.
And she didn't like that. She ended up in Santa Cruz.
So from London to Fresno, and then you went to... And then
she was like... Santa Cruz. She was like, screw hospital work. And all these lazy sons of bitches. Because her mentality was like, everyone's lazy. No one could work as hard as herself. And so she just went out on her own. Opened up a care facility in Santa Cruz and then got into real estate and helping wealthy people in the peninsula at the time.
Okay. And you mentioned your dad was one of 14. Was it 14?
One of 13.
One of 13. Okay.
Apparently grandma was pregnant. Maybe miscarried one of them.
Wow.
So, which would have been the 14th.
So...
grandma
was pregnant for half her life.
In the span of 21 years.
Yeah.
Pregnant.
Yeah.
14.
So, yeah.
Not only that, but being a mother.
So, and then your mom was one of...
One of 11.
So, adding those numbers together, Rory, we come up obviously with, 24, 25.
Yeah, yeah.
How many cousins have you?
Well. And I think... I mean, it's on both sides, it's about 25.
Okay.
First cousins. And I'm the youngest on both sides. But it's a strange story of, I'm the youngest, but my dad is like the oldest. And my mom's kind of the youngest. And then I'm the youngest of all of us. It's like...
Kind of skews everything?
It's interesting. And there's people all over. My cousin from... Melbourne flew into Nob Hill or San Francisco on her way to London to visit her sisters, my first cousins. And she's like, hey, I'm staying in SF. I'm just on a layover. Can you meet up? And I said, of course I can. And I went down Nob Hill and we had pints and I met her Dutch husband.
Okay.
And I met their son and their kid, the two boys. Well, I guess the girl was traveling. There's three of them. But the one boy I met is like prototypical Aussie kid, like mullet, super, super blonde hair, surfer, like nice kid.
So the family.
And so that's the next generation.
Yeah. So the family have, obviously, with so many cousins.
Right.
I'm going to guess a chunk of them are still back in Ireland.
I would say most of my mother's are still there.
Okay, and I know that you travelled back in November of last year, and you had a little bit of an odyssey around the West Coast.
Yeah, well, all of November I flew into Dublin from, I think it was Frankfurt, Dublin, and then I got a rental car, a small Yaris or something.
Okay.
And it was a right-wheel drive.
Of course it was, it should
and,
be.
And I think it was a manual.
Yeah, it's the proper way to drive.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's like, I took a couple breaths and I was like, okay, I've done this before in New Zealand and I've been to Ireland many times driving. It's a little bit of an adjustment. It's like,
yeah,
and that's why you have bumpers. They actually use them. They're like parallel parking or like, you hit each other. But, I mean, Dublin, like the ring road.
Yeah,
it's just grown since I was there. I would say I was there 10 years ago.
Okay.
Working in a wine trade.
Okay, so you went there to sell wine? Or
so, yeah, Dublin was one of my... I worked with the... when I was in a brokerage of export.
Okay.
Cal Wine Institute hosted trade shows. And Pro Wine was always the showcase of Europe in Dusseldorf. And then they'd also, like, Napa Vintners or Cal Wine Institute, they'd be like, oh, we're going to Zurich today, or we're going... I'm trying to think of the cities we went. It's like, we just roamed around. Okay. It's like, we're going to Copenhagen, and we're going to... We have a tasting in London.
And you're being paid to do this. Isn't it great?
Yeah, and I was... Yeah, I got to be on the road and do my work and have a laptop and... It was fine.
So we'll come back to Ireland in a bit because there's lots to share about Ireland.
Sure,
you've
sure.
got some great stories.
Well, there's...
Yeah, I mean, we've plenty of whiskey,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, apparently.
So, when you and I first met here in Napa, we reckoned it was about 2010 or so, and you were working in wine.
I must have been at Terra Vontine at the time.
You were, yeah. I remember we did an event there, met you.
Was it like a... What kind of event?
It was a meetup back then.
Was it like a chamber of commerce kind of thing?
No, back then the social media was the big thing, and I ran the event, the Facebook meetup, and we came to Terra Valentine. Yeah, yeah. You wonderful colleagues of yours, Sam Baxter and Tracy right. Marie Smith, were my liaison for that, and
yeah.
We had a lot of fun this long time ago. We did that. Well, but what was it that got you into wine? Was there ever wine in the house when you were growing up?
Mom wasn't much of a drinker, and I remember my first beer, a can of Budweiser, with my dad.
Okay.
Out in the orchard, like, cracking a beer for him. And that later in his life, is like, you know, he didn't drink as much as he probably did when he was a kid. And probably why, you know, whether it's like heart failure or just like, I mean, many Irish, I guess, are prone to alcoholism. Why? I don't know if we're prone to, or I think it's maybe the short winters.
I was going to say the northern climes. I think have a lot to do with it.
And I read about like Scandinavia and like their propensity to.
Yeah.
They have dark days.
And parts of Russia as well, and you know, again, yeah. Northern climes.
Right.
So, mum and dad ended up out here. You said dad in San Francisco, mum in Santa Cruz. And
yeah.
How did they connect and meet?
So they met at the Hibernian Center.
Okay.
In the city, okay. By the, I think it's the. What is it? The SF Zoo?
Yeah, down there in the southwestern part. Yeah,
I should know the address, but
I think it's called the United Irish Cultural Center now.
I think you're right.
Yeah,
and that was like a hub of meeting up, of get to know somebody or meet your brother or bring the family. I think I was there as a kid.
Yeah, many times. So they met there. And where were you born?
So I was born in San Leandro.
Okay.
On the East Bay.
Okay.
And from that house, when my pop lived there, because he would commute into the city and stay six nights a week at the pub. This before I was born. Imagine, and he'd come home on Sunday to take the kids and family to church.
Do Sunday dinner.
And to, like, crack the belt or whatever he did. I mean, it was like, it's just what you did.
And then moved up to, because I know you've got a connection here to wine country.
Yeah, so then in the 70s, he moved to Sebastopol, where I'd say he and my mom.
Yeah.
And which is where my brother still is, and where I still have a connection. It's like a nice place to grow up, apples.
And back then, Rory, I'm guessing it was definitely rural, Sebastopol.
Yeah,
and I say that in a wonderfully positive sense.
I think it's become more today, like more chic.
Okay.
When you think of Sonoma County, like Healdsburg, Sebastopol, Petaluma, like these, they've become desirable places.
Yeah.
Which, as a kid, I'm like,
back then it was the country.
I mean, we would drive down the 101, you know, one lane, sitting in the back of my dad's truck, to go visit uncles that lived on 19th Avenue.
So we should say in the back of the truck. You don't mean in the back seat of the truck. You're talking
in the back of the truck. And we had a rope. It was this old, I should know the truck. It's this old Datsun.
Okay.
And we had this rope that
held you in.
We just kind of like, I mean, you could slide under it, but it wasn't the safest thing. I mean, you'd never see that today.
No. Of course you wouldn't. So you would go across the wonderful Golden Gate in the back of this pickup truck.
Absolutely. And probably freezing our asses off. But we didn't know any better.
Yeah.
And maybe we even had like a blanket where it's like, if it got cold, we'd just tuck under.
And I'm guessing that trucks back then didn't actually have back seats in the cab.
There was
two seats up front.
Nor did it have like cushion, like soft. I mean, you were sitting on the metal bed.
Yeah.
Which, probably not the most comfortable thing, but
it builds character.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
we're going to take a break in a couple of minutes. I'm gonna whip up an Irish coffee here on this winter's morning. We're I guess folks know we're sitting in your Airstream, but we're sitting in your Airstream in a really interesting part of Napa County.
So up here, the Howell Mountain
AVA. Yeah.
Howell Mountain AVA is the town is called Angwin.
Mm-hmm.
And you think about I think it's a Vanka range that's on this side.
On the east side, yep.
And it's volcanic all the way up to Mount St. Helena.
Yeah.
And so you have these beautiful, like, hillside vineyards that... I guess I'm prone to being on Spring Mountain. I grew to really enjoy mountain fruit.
Yeah.
And just as much as it is here. It's... Yeah.
It's definitely a different style of wine that's made in the mountain areas of I'll say Napa Valley, but we're not actually in the valley, we're in the mountains.
What, 2,000 feet elevation at the highest.
And so there's a number of kind of quirky things about Angwin.
Sure.
That a lot of people who will listen to this and watch this will not realize.
Right.
The town of Angwin is in the unincorporated part of the county, so, you know, served by county services. But essentially owned and run by a college here.
Yeah, so back, call it 100 years ago, Healdsburg College, which I suppose was in the Healdsburg area, was a collective or group of Seventh-day Adventists, and they found Angwin as a place to relocate and settle, and Ellen White is down, she lived down Glass Mountain Road at their Elms Heaven, where the Sterling Hospital is.
Okay.
And so it was like the focus on health and well-being and also faith. And yeah, that's why they're here. I mean, it's a nice place for that.
Yeah, and obviously...
And I've been here for 20 years.
Yeah. And what's interesting is there's a couple of quirky things about...
Not that I'm Adventist.
You know, and
I grew up Roman Catholic, probably like yourself.
As did I, and everyone's entitled to to practice their
faith. Well, original sin, right? I mean, we're all guilty.
Yeah, that's a rabbit hole we probably don't want to
go down. Yeah, sure.
So it's interesting that within the Seventh-day Adventist faith, a couple of things that they, you know, are or are not allowed to, you know, to consume or eat. And you shared with me, and I know this because I've come up here a number of times over the years.
Right.
One of the interesting ones is coffee. So
yeah, coffee's typically not, because it's considered a stimulant or a...
Yeah.
Like black tea.
Is there a kind of a black market up here of people doing illicit coffee sales?
Well, I always thought it'd be fun to have like a speakeasy.
Coffee speakeasy.
Even booze.
Yeah.
Like somewhere by the college, just have a little hut. Because
that's the other thing.
It's like you could take and give.
Yeah.
And this is a safe place where you can leave like fruits and veg out and just come and go and pay as...
Yeah. And the other thing that's in the Seventh-day Adventist faith that is not allowed, is alcohol.
Yeah. Alcohol or nicotine.
Yeah. So you can't buy a bottle of wine at the store here.
So at the college market, you will not see... You'll find coffee.
Okay.
You won't find alcohol. And today you won't find meat.
Yeah.
They used to have a deli where they offered tri-tip or cuts of chicken.
Yeah.
And, it's... if you want it, I guess you plan ahead or go to Sunshine and San Juan.
Down the hill.
Just as well.
Yeah.
Or go to the farmer's market.
Yeah.
No. Where you can get, like, nice seafood. And...
Yeah. No, it's one of the things, I moved here back in 2008 and... moved to the Napa Valley, and it's this, you know, incredible place with a global reputation for making excellent, you know, fantastic wines.
Right.
And as I lived here a while longer, and I heard about this place called Angwin and how it has these quirky rules.
Yeah. Well, I guess you had an experience teaching.
Yes. Yeah.
A course or a period.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I used to come up here, a number of times and got to experience it. But what's fascinating is that we are surrounded literally here where we're sitting in your wonderful Airstream, we're surrounded by some world-class vineyards. So some phenomenal wine is made up here in Howell Mountain.
Yeah.
So it's just that kind of, I don't know, contradiction between vineyards.
Even like you have hobby wines. Like my neighbor who just moved in next door, he's like, yeah, we're gonna plant Petit Verdot, or we're going to do a row of Cab Franc, or I'm not quite sure what he said, but I came across a bag of corks, and I was like, Maybe you can use these one day. And he's like making wine in a bucket. And they picked the Sauv Blanc or whatever the white varietal was on these vines that I share basically near their driveway.
Okay.
And Yeah, it's a... And then you have people that are making cider, for example, with apples.
Up here? In...
Well, like a... I would say like a hobby.
Yeah.
My friend at the Terraces, if you know Tim Kroll.
Yeah.
You go through this quarry vineyard, and he's planted like... I don't know what he said. He's got 100 plus trees. And they bottled it, and now they offer like a house-made cider. Sparkling cider,
and
which before was just kind of like a household like hobby thing.
Yeah, well,
and now it's a commercial product.
Yeah,
it's actually very good.
And would he be planting some old varieties of apples, some heirlooms, and?
I don't know specific what his varietals are. My brother is big into grafting heirloom varietals, and he gave me 25 pounds of apples the other day, and he labeled them, and he like I think even the. The apples that I have in that bowl there.
Yeah.
The pink ladies. It's like, yeah, these are good for eating. And it's like, he has apples year round.
And what most people won't know is, so where you last mentioned, you know, being not raised over in the Sebastopol area.
Right.
Famed for its orchards, historically.
Yeah, I would say so. Luther Burbank and his heirloom varietals. And, you know, those old orchards are now... world-class vineyards themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's interesting when you look back at the history of Napa and Sonoma, you know, call it wine country.
Yeah.
You know, Napa was known for its stone fruits and its walnuts.
Uh-huh.
And yet, over where you were raised, it was known for its apple orchards.
Uh-huh.
And interesting to have seen the evolution from that into vines. Obviously, the ground perfectly suited to a great climate.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
know, we have that wonderful balance. You know, we've got the influence from the Pacific. We get warm days and cool nights, which allows us to grow wonderful fruit.
There was a program that the Napa Vineyards ran. It was called Napa Rocks, and there was this. I'll never forget. I still have it somewhere. I'll share with you. The photo of, I'd say, the corridor 29 approaching Yountville.
Mm-hmm.
Back in 50 years ago. And then that same corridor today is more or less ag.
Mm-hmm.
And then they shared a photo of Silicon Valley 50 years ago when it was orchards. And then today it's just all concrete.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, I mean, the Bay Area has grown.
Yeah.
Obviously Silicon Valley is...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, everywhere has grown. It's, I think one of the things we've done a great job of here in Napa that we can be very proud of is the Ag Preserve that
right,
you know, I know when it was brought into being it was very contentious,
sure,
friendships were lost when it happened, but
right.
In some ways it still gives us this feeling here in Napa Valley and Napa County of this bucolic rural feeling. You and I can jump in our car or truck or whatever and we can be in San Francisco on a good day in just over an hour,
right?
An hour
right.
And 50 minutes, or you know, you can drive to the ferry and take it there. You can be in these. We can be at the coast, and I know you were skiing recently.
So. Yeah, or up in the. I took the train up to Truckee, and like, we had 6 feet of snow.
Yeah, so we live in this little what I would call a rural enclave, so to speak.
Right.
And I'm grateful for that. You know, I come from, you know, obviously Dublin, but I actually come from what used to be a rural part of Dublin. It's now. You mentioned
What area of Dublin?
A village called Kiltearnan. It used to be a village. It's now grown massively. You mentioned the ring road, the M50. Kiltearnan has its own exit on junction on the M50, which back in the day,
I used to have an auntie. She lived in Temple Log.
Temple Log, yeah. Yeah,
so and she's now down in closer to Cork City to be cared for, looked after.
Okay.
And... God, those days, just watching that ring road grow in the airport and Ryanair.
Well, back in the day, Rory, when we would go to, you know, in the 70s and 80s, when we would go to the airport, it was it was 20-something miles from Kiltearnan to the airport in a straight line, but you had to go through the city centre. And it could take you a couple of hours.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, on a good run from the folks' house to the airport, it's 25 minutes.
Right.
So, you know... That's progress, and you experienced it when you did your trip last November. The road system is so much better.
When I flew into the airport I got the rental car, and I drove to a town called Monastir Evan. Sorry.
That's okay.
On the way to Kildare.
Yeah.
Or I think I took a break in Kildare and went to Starbucks, and they had this like posh shopping area, and it was a holiday market, and I was like, God, it feels like I'm in, could be anywhere, some kind of shopping mall. Yeah. It's like all the stuff.
Yeah. No, it's, to me, a lot of that progress is incredibly positive.
Mm.
You know, when you and I were talking in advance of this, I shared that 24 of my class of 31 from college left Ireland in 1990. There was nothing there for us.
Right.
And
right.
I'm at the tail end of that great emigrant wave.
Yeah.
And I went to London, like so many generations before me.
Would you say that's common for your age group or generation?
Yeah. Very much so.
Okay.
We literally, when I was growing up, the amount of people who were my cousins next door, of the five of them, four of them left and a couple of them eventually came back.
Right.
Neighbours, people in the scout troop, people that I went to school with and college,
mm-hmm.
we left. I love now when I go to Ireland and I see that there is incredible opportunity for the kids who are growing up in Ireland that they don't have to leave. That being said, I do think there is a lot to be said with working abroad for a period of time.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
you know, graduate from college and go and work abroad for 2 or 3 or 4 years.
Right.
Get a bit of a perspective. And I think that's important.
And so, I guess that was the appeal for me. I mean, granted, I went to college at Sonoma State, which is, you know, on any given day, I could go home and see mom or
mm-hmm.
I still have my bedroom. And I'm like, it wasn't that bad of a drive.
No.
At that time. I mean, between Roner Park and Sebastopol. And then I found the study abroad program.
Yeah.
I was like, well, I'll go to New Zealand, English speaking, but...
Different culture.
You know, right wheel drive.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Kiwis were glorious. Some of the nicest people you could ever imagine. And I was just, I don't know, impressionable.
Yeah, well, in your late teenage, early 20 years, a lot of people are.
And I think I turned 21 there, and not that drinking is a problem there.
Well, the legal age of age.
Well, it can be, but yeah, it was just, the college experience was really good overseas.
Good.
And, which is where I got introduced to what we call tramping in New Zealand. A tramp is like a proper, well, you're going to go out into the wilderness and take a walk. You're going to go tramp.
Yeah.
And I had no idea.
It's a different language.
How fun and just, it could be. It's like being out in nature. You take a walk. It's like,
yeah.
No, you go look at beautiful, like, nature things.
Yeah, for sure. So we're going to take a bit of a break.
Please.
Yeah, no, we're loads more to chat about, but we're going to upgrade from the wonderful pour of Caskmate Stout Edition to an Irish coffee. So
Let's do it.
We will be back in a couple of minutes.
Okay. Absolutely.
Nice job.
I'll get the, I have a frother that might help.
Okay, perfect. Right back here. So let's have a quick toast.
Cheers.
Slant you again.
Cheers to a...
Yeah, so a lovely...
A nice Irish coffee.
Obviously, we're not doing it in the glasses. We're doing it in cups and tumblers.
Mm.
Well done, sir. That's...
And would there be a glass that's...
Yeah, the
aside from a coffee cup?
Yeah, traditional Irish coffee glass would be, have a handle.
Uh-huh.
Or...
Yeah, it would be like a glass.
Yeah, or there is a if you think about it, almost like a wine glass that's elevated. But
right.
In the stem, there would be a thicker piece where you'd actually be able to pinch it.
Yeah, and I guess you'd be able to see the layers
of course.
Coffee, cream. Yeah.
And folks can't see the layers in here, but
you
did a lovely job of whipping up some fresh coffee over in the Airstream kitchen. And we managed to float our cream on top, which is perfect.
The AeroPress is a version of a French press, which makes a nice just cup of coffee.
Oh,
and it's a spoonful of ground. It's
perfect.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about a family member of yours. Yeah. And the reason we want to talk about him is he wrote a phenomenal book that the first time I've seen it is here.
Right.
It's The Set Dances of Ireland.
Yeah. So my brother, my half brother, Larry, my late half brother, who was just a gem of a man. And he taught Irish dance, I would say, call it every year in Milltown, Malby, where they have the Willie Clancy School.
Okay.
And I went there, I was riding my bicycle at the time. And I remember meeting him and taking the dance class for the week. And it was just, I mean, the crack was mighty.
Of course.
It was just infectious. And going back there to that area after I knew he passed, it was just, still in the wintertime, it's like the music, the dance,
the crack
continues. It doesn't stop.
Yeah. So do you have any idea what prompted Larry to put all this into black and white?
I believe it's from his I'd say his mother's family reign or mother's family lineage.
Okay.
I think they had a root from Montana.
Okay.
Her name was Sullivan. And it was, he writes a dedication in the beginning of the introduction of how he was encouraged or came about to learn.
Because what he's done is in here, I'm going to check the last page here. We've got almost 325 or so pages of illustrated dances.
Yeah.
It's phenomenal. And good on him for getting it down in black and white.
And he was always, at least when he talked about it, he's like, what it took to research and record these old musicians in a setting like this, in a barn, or who knows where, like, this dance or, you know, this folk, like, revitalization is like, I guess the Irish were suppressed in many ways of, like, no, you can't have music, no, you can't be festive. And that's exactly what we are.
Yeah.
It's like we're a festive crowd. And for the British, it's all called the monarch, to suppress or to, like, say no or collect tax. You know, there's a... There's the lyric of trying to pay less to the excise man. Because, I mean, they would tax everything. And, like, it's like, okay, you have a roof on your house. Well, you're going to pay more tax. So you had houses.
You have to have some fun somewhere.
Some homes didn't have roofs. They're like, well, we'll live without a roof because we can't afford the tax.
So Larry obviously was a dancer.
He was, and musician.
And so by that we would say an Irish dancer.
Right.
You said he competed as well. He was a competitive.
Yeah, so in his, I would say, memorial, in his slideshow, or at his passing, I was learning about, you see some of the old photos of him as a kid. And I guess river dance became the popular mode of that type of dance. But, you know, I'd say his experience was like, he grew up with it.
Mm-hmm.
He played the accordion or he played, you know, he had a sense of music and teaching dance. And he would teach in the Fort Mason.
Okay.
In the city.
In the city, okay.
Where,
This book is...
And still today, there's cousins and, I guess, my older nephew's kids that are in these competitions. I mean, me going to school in West Sonoma County, it's like I played athletics and I didn't really have an exposure to,
of course,
music or dance.
Or Irish music.
I guess I could have if I wanted to be in the band, but I was more athletic and I enjoyed football, basketball, baseball. And at the same time, I had friends that played brass instruments or, you know, recorded music. And I love music today.
Which, obviously we can't play it while we're recording.
But, that's what it'd be a copyright infringement.
We'd get in trouble, but no, it was lovely to arrive up here and there was some music playing and you actually, I think you had stepped out here while I was setting up. And Christy Moore, Ride On was playing.
Which, yeah, Christy Moore. I mean, what a legend.
Which took me right back. So it was lovely that you were continuing that.
And then if you know his song, Liston Varna.
Yeah.
Playing at the Eurovision in the 70s. I mean, still today, that song is just...
Yeah, it's one of the...
It's so just mightily, like, uplifting. And it's like, you can't help but feel good.
Yeah.
When that song comes on.
One of those mighty crack songs. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we come back to our Irish coffee. We made it with the Caskmate Stout. I have to say, I really enjoy it in there.
You said that, yeah.
Yeah, it tastes lovely. Classically.
Do you think it, you had a description of how it offsets the coffee
can? It softens the coffee to me.
Okay. Otherwise, the coffee stands out as... Harsh tannic?
I wouldn't say harsh or tannic, but it's more balanced. You know, you and I obviously know enough about wine that we talk about balance in a wine.
Sure, sure.
And obviously we've got four component parts in this.
Right.
And I find that there's a lovely balance. It softens the coffee.
Yeah.
And you can actually, that we talked about earlier on when we were tasting it out of the glasses, there's a kind of a sweet creaminess to it, which comes through. It actually comes through in the coffee.
Oh, right.
So, no, it's a lovely addition. And
Well, and it's interesting to hear you describe, make the beer cask or the IPA when we were talking on the phone yesterday about.
It's a smoky finish.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's interesting.
And these are artisanal boutique type of, I would say, selling points.
Yeah.
I mean, are just like, like our friend Niall is doing in St. Helena with his beer. It's like, yeah, it's expensive, but my God, it takes a lot of craftsmanship.
No, it's obviously Jameson, the most popular and best-selling Irish whiskey on the planet.
Right.
So it's great that they've kind of expanded their base range by adding, by adding these options to it. Because I think this is a great base for an Irish coffee. The classic is Tullamore Dew,
which you have here.
Yes. Yeah. And everyone has their favorite. Every home has their favorite. I'm sure folks up north would have traditionally used Bushmills. Folks in Dublin might have used Powers.
What do you mean up north?
Up north, in the north of Ireland.
Okay.
Folks in Dublin might have traditionally used Powers, which is an old Dublin label.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think this works lovely in the Irish coffee. So, so over on your end, I'm not sure folks can see it on camera, but certainly we're going to talk about.
No, please.
You've we talked about your parents. Obviously, both passed.
Yeah.
But you hold on to their memory very dearly. I
absolutely
sense that from you.
I mean, I can't help but be like, yeah, my mom's son or my...
And very proud of your Irish roots. And
I was a child when my father passed, but even his like heritage or his story, it's like, I can't help but carry that with me. It'd be like, well, this is my baggage.
Yeah, no, it's...
And just as it is yours.
Yeah, we all have our stories.
Yeah.
So you've pulled out, you went digging knowing I was coming up onto the mountain, and you've pulled out some old photo albums.
Yeah, so I've got an old photo album of, call it my mom.
Okay, let's pop it in there.
I don't know if you want to have a look or how you want to do this.
So, it's great that you still have these. And
she, sadly, she passed in a car accident 10 years ago. But... I remember putting this together, her black and white photos as a kid, and then the baptism, which I went through as a kid. I think all three of us did. I say three of us, my brother Patty, my older brother Timothy, we all went to St. Rose Catholic School in Santa Rosa, and so we went through the sacrament of communion, confession. I mean, all that nonsense. That,
it keeps going. It's wonderful.
And then here's a photo of my father. I don't know what casino is or what they're spinning.
But they're gambling.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's trying to make a little income like he did.
Like a little side income.
Well, he had a little side hustle in the house where I grew up. Where, I kid you not, on... And I'm laughing because on the wedding cert, which I needed
for your proper,
needed for the Irish passport. Mm-hmm. I needed to show the wedding cert from, I think it was San Leandro County.
Okay.
And they were able to like call it up, give me the original, And on the wedding cert, my father's occupation was listed as chinchilla farmer.
Chinchilla farmer.
Do you know what a chinchilla is?
I've looked them up.
Or why one would have them in the house.
I don't know.
So he grew them, and these were cured, or these are pelts. Feel
okay,
it.
Yeah.
It's probably the softest thing you'll ever feel.
So a chinchilla is a small ground...
It's like a vermin.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not fully familiar with it, but...
And these are the pelts?
These are pelts.
From you, that your father made?
And he had them cured or dried. Yeah. I got the old tags. I mean, there must be like 100 of them.
Funny that was listed as his occupation.
And so, if I look on my birth certificate, his occupation, again, chinchilla farmer, and my mom was probably RN, yeah. Or nurse.
Okay.
Or midwife, which was her specialty. But, yeah. I mean, since then, I've used some of these on, like, outfits for Burning Man.
That was my next question.
And so...
did these get...
So, I took a couple and I put on a leather jacket as to the cufflinks.
Uh-huh.
And then also I flared out the neck. And so on any given night at Burning Man, it's like you meet people and you're like, hey, touch this. Because it's a soft thing.
Yeah, no doubt.
And yeah, it's unusual. And it's like, that was just one of his side hustles.
Well, I never thought that when we were going to do a video and a chat or a recording and a chat
yeah.
about Irish whiskey...
Right.
That I'd end up learning about
chinchillas.
Chinchillas.
I mean, yeah, I mean, you could probably include that in the title. Like, yeah. I mean, I don't know where these things live. Yeah. Like, who does this?
I think it's time for people to...
Well, and I think when you get animal rights and activists and they're like, no fur, I get it. And there can be like a humane way of growing it or...
Yeah.
You know, making a little bit of money.
Yeah.
Which
it was like you said,
which he did apparently.
Yeah, it was a side hustle.
And you'll if you talk to my cousins, to hear them talk about visiting the home where I grew up, and they were older than me, and they're like, yeah, that bedroom of chinchillas. And I hear them talk about it, I'm like, well, yeah. I get he had cages like in a bedroom. I don't know, the fourth bedroom or whatever it was. Could have been like a dark, carpeted,
yeah,
coal. I don't know what it was. I don't know why you do it.
Fascinating.
And people today, I know, have like rabbits as pets.
Yeah.
Which is, to me, is kind of awkward. I mean, we all need emotional support, but a rabbit?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Anyway.
Fascinating insight into a different era.
Yeah.
And obviously one that, you know, you still have some of the remnants of, which is wonderful. So, Rory, I think you and I will keep chatting.
Please.
But
please.
I think we're going to wrap up the recording.
Absolutely. Well, thank you. It's been a treat.
No, it's been great to reconnect. That's one of the wonderful things about this journey of mine into Irish whiskey is actually using it as a way to connect and reconnect with folks. It's
absolutely
fantastic. And you're the first person to say that your favourite Irish was an Irish coffee.
Uh-huh.
So it's been lovely to share an Irish coffee with you.
Yeah, well, it was a good occasion.
Here in the Airstream.
Yeah. Well, cheers, and also to the queue.
To the queue. So.
And, yeah.
So, perfect. Right.
All right.
Well done, sir.
Thanks for taking the time to listen to this episode. You'll find more episodes wherever you get your podcasts, and you'll find the My Favourite Irish video series at irishwhiskeylad.com. That's Irish Whiskey with an E, LAD.com. If you've enjoyed this episode, I'd appreciate it if you could take a couple of minutes to leave a review or a rating at your favourite podcast platform. Until next time, sláinte wá.